Previously on the Civic Tech in Africa podcast.
I hesitate to say that simplicity is a goal, because sometimes simplicity isn't possible in tech. But more than simplicity, I think, is the human awareness. Right. So you build an app, however simple it is, if I don't have awareness, I can't use it. Think about the first time you had to use a mobile phone, or you had to show your mom how to use a mobile phone, or somebody who's older, and you realize that even the feature phones, as simple as they are, it may have taken, you know, an older person a few minutes to understand their way around texting, for example.
To listen to this episode and more, find the Civic Tech in Africa podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by Civic Tech Innovation Network in partnership with Voice of Viz.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Civic Tech in Africa podcast. My name is Nati Mgregua, and we are so happy for you to join us again. Today, you are joining us at the beginning of a series of episodes looking at the work of the Charter Project Africa. The Charter Project Africa is a three-year Pan-African initiative supporting civil society to promote continental commitments contained in the Africa Charter on Democracy, Elections, and Governance. This charter, being the Central African Union policy document to advance democratic governance in the African Union member states. The Charter Project Africa initiative is led by six member organizations, which we will learn more about in this episode. Please check out today's show notes to learn more about this project. But before we begin, I want to tell you that this episode is co-funded by the European Union. Its contents are the sole responsibility of the Charter Project Africa and do not necessarily reflect the views of the European Union. To get us started with the Charter Project Africa series, we'll be talking to Andrew Songa and Ada Joa. Andrew is a lawyer and human rights advocate in the areas of legal research, policy formulation and analysis, domestic and international policy advocacy, and civic education. Ada is a project manager at the Civio Institute. Her work in the development sector with regional and international organizations extends over 10 years. Today, my guests join me to talk about the Charter Project Africa and their respective involvements in this project. Andrew and Ada, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here as well.
I'm happy to have you both. In today's episode, we're going to take a deep dive into the project and look at the grantees as well. So we know that Ada is one of the beneficiaries of the project. But we're going to start talking to Andrew, who heads up this project. We had started introducing this project last season with Justin Ehrenstein. We started talking about what the aims of the project are. But we're going to sort of do a recap here with Andrew. Andrew, I don't know if you're willing to do this, but do you want to tell us a little bit about the project and what it seeks to do?
Thank you. Just as you touched on a bit earlier, we are a Pan-African initiative consisting of six civil society organizations, four within the continent and two from Europe. Just to highlight who they are, we have Africtivist and the Bore Institute from Senegal, who are both organizations that emphasize citizen engagement on matters of governance. Africtivist bringing together a collection of continental bloggers and online activists that are seized of key debates on governance on the continent. Gore Institute having a long-standing record on documenting and researching and highlighting key issues on governance around the West African region. And then you also have Democracy Works Foundation from South Africa, which also has a similar profile of investing in citizen engagement on democratic governance matters. Code for Africa, that is renowned for the work they do in terms of developing civic technology tools that boost not only open governance, but also citizen engagement in matters of governance. And then you have the two European partners, which are ECDPM, that is a policy think tank that is very much seized on the European Union-African Union relations, and in this project focusing on key elements of that relationship and how it impacts democratic governance of the continent. And my home organization, which is the European Partnership for Democracy, that is a largely member-based network that brings together different organizations that advocate for citizen engagement in democratic governance issues and serves as the secretariat for this project. So the Charter Project Africa brings together these organizations because we seek to advance citizen engagement on the implementation of the African Charter of Democracy, Elections, and Governance but primarily through emphasizing the use of civic technology to amplify citizens' voices. And so, as you've mentioned, we do have a series of grantees under the project whom we have supported to either incubate or amplify their innovative projects that seek to bridge the gap between policymakers and citizens through using civic technology platforms to boost dialogues around a series of governance issues. But beyond supporting grantees, we also do have other elements of activities that we undertake under the project to boost our overall goal of citizen engagement around the ACTEC. And this is also undertaking a series of digital engagement initiatives, such as conducting a series of thematic webinars that bring together individuals, citizens, and different policymakers from within the African Union to debate contemporary issues around democratic governance, such as the challenge of unconstitutional changes of government, which we're seeing on the continent. We also seek to have a series of regional engagements that bring together multi-stakeholders from the national, regional, and continental level to also discuss common pathways of boosting citizen engagement. And then also engaging very directly with key institutions within the African Union, in particular the African governance architecture, which is concerned with engaging states to make sure that they do live up to their obligations under the ACTEC. And we boost that level of engagement with policymakers with the final component of the project, which is policy analysis and strategy, where we do undertake a series of researches that are aimed to provide some evidence-based platforms for our advocacy on how civic technology can be of important use to both policymakers and citizens in pushing dialogues of democratic governance, but then also highlighting some suggestions on how we think the implementation of the ACTEC can be much improved from the perspective of civil society. I hope that provides a very good overview and picks up from the last series of episodes in which you introduced the Charter of Project Africa.
Thank you so much for that. And I like that when I was reading about the project itself, I mean, one of the key components of it is collaboration, right? And I see that even from the top level, the high level, there is collaboration with these six organizations coming together with their expertise to guide the vision of the project itself. I'm very interested in how we went about choosing, and I know Ada is one of the grantees, how you went about choosing some of these grantees to participate in this project. And maybe to add to that, you know, and what is their sort of individual, and I know there's, you sort of stated the different things that were going to be done by this project. What is the involvement of these different initiatives in reaching the objectives of the project itself?
Thank you. So one of the key pillars of this project, of course, was always going to be seeking to support innovative approaches by civil society organizations around the continent who are either exploring the use of civic technology or are seeking to upskill the use of civic technology to boost citizen engagement with different levels of policy actors and hopefully then expand the spaces for conversations on how the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance can be implemented.
Right.
And I have to admit, when we did issue out the call, we were both impressed and overwhelmed by the multitude of applications and creative projects that we received.
Right.
But then, of course, as is always the case with this kind of projects, you do have to reconcile insatiable demand with limited resources.
Mm.
And so we then had to take up the very difficult task of distilling all those very rich applications into a small number of initiatives that we could then support. But then to get there, what we were then looking for were at least some elements of within the projects that could indicate a very strong sense of understanding of the context within which the initiative was going to operate.
Right.
A very strong commitment of empowering citizens to have direct engagements with policymakers and also to sensitize those citizens on the issues were very key elements that we were focusing on. And then the ability to try and just project some aspect of sustainability for the initiative, that in fact the organizations we are tapping to support do have a projection of really inculcating or embedding civic technology as a key strategic approach to their future advocacy. And so with those parameters, we then set about selecting a very difficult process, but had to be done. Then we went about selecting the grantees that we do have. And of course, CVO Institute became one of those grantees that we are particularly happy with in terms of the work they've been able to do, which I'm sure we will get into.
So I like the fact that you've touched on the civic tech of it all, and civic tech playing a central role in how you selected these initiatives. So all of these organizations that you have under this project, people are focusing on civic tech, and how important was this, the tech of it all, this aspect of tech in selecting these people? Was it the main focus?
It was the very key, it was a central focus for this particular aspect of the project and this grants, because as I did mention previously, a key plank of this project is to amplify citizens' voices and citizens' engagement through the use of civic technology, because we realize that besides mainstream or traditional advocacy, which is the in-person conversations you can have with policymakers, which is the grassroots meetings you can have with citizenry, we do recognize that there is a potential of expanding constituencies that engage with these issues through using digital engagement and civic technology platforms. We've seen this particularly in the last 3 years, especially with the onset of the COVID pandemic, when we all had to go through the lockdown periods, and we had to stay isolated and not have direct engagements for a while. We then realized that there was a lot of potential that could be tapped into by using virtual platforms, by facilitating digital engagement. And so consolidating those lessons and asking ourselves, how do we sustain conversations on the civic platform that can then impact democratic governance, became a driving force for us when we were constructing these grants. And beyond that also, there's the potential that we then realize civic technology presents in bolstering continental solidarity, I would call it, creating linkages between different initiatives, different movements that are grappling with similar challenges of democratic governance within their contexts, but now getting them to have conversations together using some of these platforms and sharing ideas with each other, and then using these platforms to magnify the ideas that work in the hope that they can be replicated or that they can inspire others to also take up those kind of approaches in their advocacy. So this was definitely a primary consideration for us.
Yeah, I said earlier that the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance sort of informs the genesis of this project itself. Could you speak a little bit about that and why that was important?
So the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance, which I've been calling the ACDEG, is the central feature of this project alongside the Plank of Civic Technology, because the ACDEG embodies the African Union's commitments and shared values on democratic governance. By that I mean, member states of the African Union, through this instrument, came together to affirm that democracy, rule of law, the promotion and protection of human rights, and upholding of constitutionalism are values they share in common as African states, and they therefore recognize them to be African shared values. And this instrument therefore becomes a platform through which the African Union member states can be held accountable by each other, by civil society, and by other stakeholders in terms of ensuring that their actions and their interactions with the public do uphold those key principles of democracy, rule of law, human rights, and constitutionalism. And beyond that aspect of accountability, it then also introduces a sense of moral authority that then in every aspect of interactions that our governments have with us as an African citizenry, that they should be able to adjudge their conduct and their visions and their ambitions against these very critical values. And that if they fail to live up to these values, this instrument then provides a pathway to us as citizens pursuing remedies or seeking to correct the errant actions of some of the government actors who are responsible for realizing these values. So what kind of values does this instrument distill into? It provides very clear benchmarks and standards on critical issues such as what it means to have free, fair, and credible elections in a country. It talks about what it means to have effective participation of women in governance affairs, as well as other marginalized groups. It also emphasizes the importance of independent institutions so that we can uphold constitutionalism. And that means independent judiciaries, independent law enforcement agencies, and as well as frameworks for accountability from the executive, where we could hold ministries and as well even as parliaments accountable to the public. Right. It then also reflects on how you can ensure that engagement of the public in terms of public participation in matters of governance is effective public participation and not nominal public participation. How do you consult the public on policies? All these are enumerated within the Act, and that makes it a very critical instrument to serve as a benchmark on gauging the state of governance in any given country in Africa. And then most importantly, it then also guides us to overcome certain key challenges that we see on the continent, like we've seen in the last 2 years, the very concerning trend of the return of military coups and other forms of unconstitutional changes of government. Right. It is this instrument that gives us the framework on how to respond to those challenges and how to even effectively sanction some of the errant governments and states that run afoul of these important values.
Right. And I'm so interested in that, the ACTEC itself and how we see our grantees now having some influence in their regions with their governments, etc., and ensuring that those governments in which they exist are able to put into practice some of the objectives set out in the charter. And I know that perhaps we have all these webinars and these regional engagements and we engage with the African Union in some way. Is there a way to ensure, maybe I'm asking a question that's not relevant to us here, is there a way to ensure that these objects are, is there a benchmark that we want to reach and say, once we've done this, we know that we have achieved the goals of the ACTEC?
So the ideal outcome for the project, and what I would call the ultimate end goal, is that we have sustained and robust public ownership of the ACTEC and its principles by the everyday citizen in engaging their governments.
Right.
That we want to make the ACTEC tangible in the key asks that the public have of their governments.
Right.
And so to do this, we need a public that is strongly aware of this very important values,
right,
that is strongly aware of the obligations that states have to implement these values, to report on the progress they're making in implementing these values, mm-hmm, and that they're also able to connect these values to the daily challenges and interactions they have with their leadership and their policymakers at the most local of levels.
Right.
And this is why some of the initiatives we've supported under the project are very exciting to me and give a lot of promise.
Right.
Not to delve too much into what will be discussed a bit later, but if I just use some illustrative examples, the work being done by Civio Institute that essentially distills political commitments into a tracker that can be put online,
right,
and that the public can interact with and therefore be able to say, this government promised this during political campaigns.
Mm.
What have they delivered now? What have they failed to deliver? And what is slightly implemented becomes a very important tool in strengthening and bolstering the public in holding their governments to account.
Right.
In understanding that there are certain governance benchmarks that governments must meet, and that there are certain obligations that they made within their campaigning that must also be related to the overall obligations they have around the ACDEG, and that we can then hold them accountable on that right. standard. We do have other initiatives, such as one in Kenya by a grantee that we are supporting, known as Mzalendo Trust. Right. And what they've done is they created a platform that actually uploads proposed laws onto a platform and then invites the public to comment on those proposed laws, to make suggestions on amendments, and that those suggestions can be consolidated into a memorandum that is then presented to Parliament and has a direct impact on the lawmaking process. As it goes on in real time. This expands the understanding of the public with regards to their lawmaking processes, and also demystifies the lawmaking process, because we do realize when you turn on your television and you look at the members of parliament debating clauses of proposed laws and talking about different motions, it can be a bit isolating or disengaging and intimidating for some. But to create a platform that then breaks down these laws, invites you to, in the very simplest ways, send in a sentence and say, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with what I've read in this particular clause, and I think this is what should be changed, and this is what would benefit the public, and that small view is consolidated with others and has a direct impact on the legal making process by being submitted to members of parliament, I think right. is a way of enhancing public participation and boosting that element of citizen engagement that is a key pillar of the ACDEG. A similar project is also being supported within the Southern African region, where a platform has been created to consolidate petitions on a myriad of governance issues that are affecting communities at a given time, and that those petitions are then consolidated and directed to the relevant policymakers right. as and when required. So in an overall nutshell, what we then see are investments in projects that we hope inspire stronger public engagement with governance issues, create tangible connections between the values of the ACDEG and day-to-day challenges that the public face, and bridging the gap between those who wield power and those who are the rights holders that are the public. Right. And hopefully through continuously supporting this kind of projects, at the end of the cycle, we will be able to talk about an expanded constituency of civil society organizations that are seized of the ACDEG as a tool they can use in their day-to-day advocacy, yeah. an expanded level of public engagement on these issues. And then, of course, we will also have a series of resources that we will have generated in the project through research, through different fellowships we've commissioned, and that these resources will outlive the project and be a source of inspiration for those who want to undertake advocacy around governance right. issues.
I'm so happy that we've done this. I mean, so perhaps I know you've probably touched on this, but what support are these grantees looking at from the project itself?
So beyond the modest financial support that we accord to the grantees to be able to implement their projects, we have also been able to have a bit of a fellowship program where we link the grantees to a series of civic tech fellows being coordinated by Code for Africa, right. and that these civic tech fellows help the grantees where required to, you know, tease out their ideas, develop their ideas a bit further, maybe provide some level of technical assistance and support to ensuring that their platforms function to the optimum level that they would want. And then outside the fellowship program, there is also the element of what we call matchmaking, where we do try and link the grantees to different policy advocacy spaces with different African Union actors. A very good example is in September last year, we were fortunate to bring together two of our grantees, that is Sivio Institute and Nzalendo Trust from Kenya, to join us during a session of the Pan-African Parliament, where they were able to then participate in a conversation with a specific committee within the Pan-African Parliament on what it would mean to collaborate between civil society and the Pan-African Parliament on realizing the shared values on democratic governance. And they also got an opportunity to provide some insight on the nature of their projects and how they are impacting the local context of engagement on this series of democratic governance issues, and also creating connections with critical actors like the Economic, Social and Cultural Council, which is essentially the platform for civil society within the African Union, and getting them to interact with them, and getting ECOSOC to be aware of the very valuable work that our grantees are doing, in the hope that down the road they would become people that ECOSOC can rely on as thematic experts within the different clusters they convene to address certain issues like public participation and civil and political rights.
Right.
So this is the kind of support we've been trying to provide to the grantees, one that sees them optimize the innovative ideas they provide us with, but then also expanding the spaces of engagement that they can have with different policy actors.
Right. And I'm so happy you've done this. And people are interested in finding out about the project, about the six organizations organizing this project. Please go to the show notes and learn more about this. As we go along in this series, we're going to be learning about the different initiatives that are involved, the different grantees that are involved in this project. So keep up with the Civic Tech in Africa podcast to learn more about these initiatives. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Yeah, I'll see you next time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Andrew. We're now going to talk to Edda, who is one of the grantees for the Charter Project Africa. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the work that she does with Sivio Institute. Hi, Edda.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, we already said hi to you at the top of this, just in case people have forgotten that you are in the room here with us. I want us to talk a little bit about the Sivio Institute and what it does and what it aims to do.
Sure. So just a little bit of history about Sivio Institute. We're a think tank established in 2018. That's really focused on looking at and, you know, reimagining or reshaping the questions around development and democracy across the African continent. And our aim is to contribute towards a more inclusive society where citizens are at the center of socioeconomic policy, and then working with citizens to enhance their agency. So our work is across three strands of work, civic engagement. Then we also have a strand of work around philanthropy and communities, and then finally on entrepreneurship and financial inclusion. So this initiative with the Africa Charter Fund was housed in our unit of civic engagement, and was really focused on enhancing and increasing government accountability using an online tracking tool where we track the policy promises that governments make at election time and post-election, and the steps that they make towards achieving or fulfilling those policy promises throughout their 5 or 4 year term of office. So it built on an existing initiative that we had started as Sivio Institute called Zim Citizens Watch, which was our pilot. So tracking the policy promises of the Zimbabwean government that came into office in August 2018. And we now got a chance to expand the initiative through the Africa Charter Fund into Malawi and Zambia. And begin that similar kind of process. We also realized that the whole issue and challenges of accountability and citizens being able to hold their governments to account is not unique to just one country across the continent. It's an Africa-wide issue. Democracy at this stage has really been reduced to just elections, and citizens have 5 minutes of power on the day of voting. But we're like, really, yeah, democracy really starts the day after elections.
Right.
How then are citizens and government going to work together, you know, to advance development? Yeah.
I like that. And I think when you introduced Civio Institute, you said that, you know, the work that you're doing focuses on citizen-led democracy. They're interested in what Civio Institute views as an ideal citizen-led democracy. What does that look like? How does it materialize itself in the work that you do as Civio Institute?
So for us, we at the center of this, of the citizen-led or focused democracy is what we call the with approach, governance with citizens. And really citizens being at the fore and at the center of decision-making processes and the kind of development that they want to see. So as I highlighted, right now, democracy has been reduced to just elections,
right.
You know, and if you have what are considered or termed free and fair elections, that's like you've ticked the checklist or the checkbox for, you know, for democracy,
right.
Or, you know, you have a season or, you know, I think like right now, you know, the focus really is like, you know, on the term limits and a change or, you know, you see someone new coming into office and that sort of thing. And you think, oh, okay, because there's been that transition, you know, the country, you know, the continent is getting more and more democratic. Yes, elections are a part of the democratic process, but they're not sufficient. So for us, you know, why then the focus on civic engagement? As I said, it's building up that agency and providing the necessary tools and information. So in the case of, you know, the policy tracker, it's really a tool, information to advance that engagement, you know, that robust engagement between citizens and their governments around what has been done, what hasn't been done, where are the shortfalls, how then do we work together to advance, you know, or, you know, to push those policy promises. Because, look, you know, you look and see the, you know, political manifestos. There's nothing inherent. It's not like political parties, you know, or governments are pushing negative things. You know, it's always positive. We want to build houses. We want to advance development, healthcare for all, you know, improve quality of living, improve the economy, you know, create jobs. But we all know that also the limitations in terms of resources and capacitation of governments, you know, and that's why, as I said, we promote the with approach, where citizens and government are working collectively, even in the space of the economy.
Yeah.
You know, which is why we have an entrepreneurship and financial inclusion space, that, you know, citizens should be active players in economic activities, you know, to help drive development. You know, we've seen a huge increase in, you know, African entrepreneurship or growth of entrepreneurship. But obviously, it still then needs to be shaped and manifested in a way that, you know, we're promoting at times even more of a socially focused or social kind of enterprise model. Mm-hmm. That, yes, we're making money, but we're also then dealing with some of the challenging and wicked problems that the continent is facing.
Right.
Philanthropy and communities, we, as a continent, you know, and as a people, they're assets that we have already. Through that, you know, in that scope of work, we're also trying to then rethink and reshape the development model and to say, you know, what is it that citizens or what's there already in place that is an asset that can be drawn upon, to, you know, to advance the continent's development, to rethink the model that does support always have to come from outside, because it has, you know, disempowered citizens. You know, they're just now seen just as recipients of aid, you know, instead of being contributors and, you know, solution makers who can pull and then leverage all the resources that they have to advance the kind of development that they want to see.
I like that, you know, so you've sort of began talking about the three pillars, I think is what you call it, or you might have called it something else, of your organization, which is civic engagement, philanthropy, and financial inclusion. In your work, what sort of impact that word, I mean, I try and not use, but what sort of impact have you seen in the work that you do in terms of materializing these things and sort of achieving the overall objective of your organization?
All right. So with our policy tracking initiative, it's been slow, but I think what the kind of impact that we're seeing is the real emphasis and I think drive towards more evidence-based discussions and engagements in relation to, as I said, what's been promised, what's been done, what's not been done, where are we with certain things, and trying to kind of push more of a model like that of, you know, it's whatever engagements happen between citizens and the government are based upon facts, you know, are based upon something that, you know, is a tool, it's real-time tracking, and evidence is collected from a myriad of sources, including even from, you know, government reports itself, from external reports, from, you know, it could be even local media sources, you know, so it's really then about pushing for those, you know, issues-driven discussions and debates,
right.
You know, around what's been done.
All these things are being done sort of through this think tank, because I want to sort of stress that your organization is solely focused on the think tank of it all.
Then just research and creating, you know, civic tech tools, definitely. So it helps us then also create then platforms for engagement and dialogue. So, you know, the tool, this tracking tool is just one component, you know, in our tool of toolbox or toolkit of things that we do. You know, then we also, you know, we'll use that to host dialogues and convenings, you know, around maybe key or topical issues related to what we've been tracking, and then use that data and information to, you know, to guide the discussions and to bring in, like, you know, key players or key, you know, stakeholders around it, together with citizens, citizen formation, citizen civil society organizations to discuss those issues. Mm. The impact that we've also seen is that, you know, when we expanded into, as I said, Zambia and Malawi with this initiative as well, you know, and now have, you know, started the process of also then working with loose networks of civil society organizations in that space who have been involved, you know, in issues around public accountability and monitoring of government performance, and giving them now this tool, you know, for them to then also then kind of use in their advocacy work, you know. And we've seen that kind of, especially, you know, on, as we follow them also on social media, and as they, we've seen it prominently in Zambia, especially, you know, it's almost like the president says that this has been done, but according to the tracker, which we're now calling African Citizens Watch and hoping to expand across the continent, you know, beyond just these three countries. You know, but, you know, Africa Citizens Watch, especially in, when you look at Zambia, you know, and the tracking tool, this is what's, you know, done. This is where things are at the moment, you know, or the evidence that we can see that this has been done or it's not been done. You know, so then it's, as I said, the impact is that it's now given them, you know, another tool and an advocacy tool, you know, to then engage with. But that's really also based on facts. And evidence, you know, it's not just hearsay.
Mm. I want us to talk about, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I would like us to talk about sort of your involvement with the Charter Project Africa. I know that one of the grantees, like I said earlier, talk about the importance of you joining a project like this And sort of how does it help you with your own work in Zimbabwe and Zambia and Malawi? What sort of contribution do you expect this work to have in your work, rather?
So I think one of the key things, you know, in our engagement with them is, one, it's allowed us to upscale. And as I said, for us, these the issues around really democracy and development, it's a continental wide issue. And, you know, as I said, the platform is called Africa Citizens Watch. So there are many countries that we still need to expand to.
Right.
But I think it's given us the impetus to, you know, to showcase what this tool could potentially do and also how it can capacitate citizens, you know, and those at the forefront of advancing change, you know. And I think a more, you know, quite a more simpler but still comprehensive way in which citizens can, you know, actively engage and see the extent to which their governments are performing. It's also the engagement with the Africa Charter Fund has also allowed us to showcase what we do at the continental level. So Andrew made reference to it earlier. We also participated in an engagement to develop guidelines of how youth can be involved, you know, in advancing more innovative ways to advance democracy on the African continent, you know. And we got to then showcase that this is the tool that we use, you know, together with a myriad of other partners drawn across the African continent.
Right.
You know, and I think it's those networking engagements, you know, sharing of ideas become really important. I remember at that meeting, you know, there was a colleague from Egypt, you know, and they said, we have something similar, you know, but the way you do it, like, I think we need to collaborate to kind of maybe, you know, draw lessons from how you are doing it, because ours is there, but it's not quite, you know, as extensive and as broad as this, you know. So how then can we also then learn from what you've done to refine, you know, what we're doing, you know, and enhance, you know, us being able to hold our government to account, but also to be able to then track, you know, in a more robust manner.
It's
what is really happening.
It's interesting because, I mean, that when you touch on collaboration, and that was the next question I was going to ask about, you know, collaboration and what sort of role that plays in your, in Sivio Institute, right? Because the project itself, Charter Project Africa, focuses on collaboration between citizens, civic initiatives, and African Union policymakers. So I was very interested in sort of the role that collaboration plays in Sivio Institute. Have you seen, and I know you've spoken about people who are interested in collaborating with you, but have you seen sort of the fruits of collaboration in your work, and would you recommend it for other people in sort of the civic tech space?
Definitely. Collaboration is extremely important for us. It's a pillar that we have. We call it a tool of work. We call it networking slash collaboration.
Right.
So it's something that's extremely important for us because we see ourselves as a Pan-African institute, but we also know that our reach and our stretch can only go so far,
right,
you know.
Right.
And so definitely we need to collaborate with others in terms of, you know, this agenda and the vision that we're trying to drive and to achieve. Mm. And also realizing that the role, you know, in collaboration, even with citizens. So, you know, making sure that we provide necessary tools, information, platforms that citizens can use. You know, it's because at the end of the day, it's that movement, that wave of citizens that, you know, really needs to then be at the forefront and advancing and, you know, engaging around the kind of, you know, democracy and development that they want to see, engaging with their governments. That so for us, that collaboration becomes important. Collaboration with other civil society organizations on the tech front, yes, definitely, because we also don't have all the ideas. We're always looking for ways of, you know, how do we refine? But, you know, as I said, others also maybe being able to draw from maybe what we've done. How then can we also then, you know, cross collaborate and, you know, engage? I think because the one thing that is kind of clear is states somehow or governments somehow manage to almost sometimes, you know, kind of read from the same kind of playbook in terms of, you know, how they're going to engage citizens or how, you know, the extent to which, or, you know, around governance issues, you know, and it seems like what, you know, we're noticing a trend, you know, in some of the other work that we're doing of, you know, a shrinking civic space, you know, that's across the continent, you know, and it's even across the world. But then how then do we work with others in the space? Collaboration becomes important as well, because the pot or pool of resources that we're working with are also limited, you know. But if we can pool resources, you know, as a civil institute together with, you know, colleagues in Malawi, colleagues in Nigeria, you know, to work on something that can have continental impact, that becomes important.
Right.
It was good, you know, as I said, with the Civic Charter Fund, that we were able to, you know, get opportunities to, as I said, showcase and talk about things that we do at sub-platforms or platforms that, you know, really then speak to African Union level decision makers, you know, and implementers. So that collaboration becomes important as well. So if for us, it's, you know, we can't do this on our own. Mm. The collaboration is going to be important if we're really going to drive, you know, and push for a more inclusive society across the African continent.
Right. And my last question to you is probably going to be more philosophical than really is like directed to your work. I know civic tech is a very important part of your project, right? Well, one of the questions that I ask consistently on the podcast is really about how you sort of balance the civic and the tech in the projects, because a lot of people are doing, you know, we're doing tech work. And so this has to be very tech heavy. And some people go like, oh, but this is very, you know, we're trying to do civic work and it has to be civic heavy. And then the tech falls off. How do you sort of balance that? How do you balance the civic and the tech? Or is balance important at all?
There has to be a balance, definitely. And the premise of this is that a tool, and this is really what the tracker is, you know, a tool, a repository of information is only as good as the way it can then be used. Right. You know, so we really then push really for an advocacy component, you know, as well as, you know, training, you know, because ultimately it must also help in advancing citizen agency and, you know, kind of reshaping and redefining what it means to be a citizen, you know, and how that then fits in towards, you know, driving a more, a different kind of democracy and development, you know. So, and I think it's a challenge we still grapple with. I don't think we found the perfect, you know, method as yet, you know, but we realize that it's important, you know, because the platform could be there, it could be doing all this great work and it could be tracking and we could write reports about it, you know, and it just becomes this kind of white elephant that's gathering dust, you know. And again, you know, but what, how then, you know, does it then become something important to, as I said, to mobilize agent, to enhance the agency of citizens? You know, how is this, as I said, just as a tool that helps them to frame and shape, you know, the demands and what they want to see from government, from their respective governments? And with if there isn't that balance, so one of the things, you know, that we hope to then advance and use this tool for, you know, we did it a little bit within the initial formal grant period with the project, but we definitely know that it's something that we still need to keep on working on. Mm-hmm. Is that, yes, this tool is here, but like, what do you do with it, and how then does it enhance, you know, the work of civil society, the work of citizens, the work of civil society organization, other non-state actors, you know, in creating more democratic spaces, more accountable spaces,
right,
in their respective countries. So there's definitely got to be that balance. The tech is good. I think it's a stepping stone towards something, but it's not a means to an end within itself.
So that balance is very important, and I think that's an important message, I think, to developers who are still, you know, starting out, a tool that they think is very interesting. And I'm so happy that we had this episode and we spoke to you, Ada. I know that people might be interested in how they reach you. Can you tell us a little bit more about how people sort of get in contact with you if they want to collaborate, etc.?
Sure. So the quickest way to get to us is by email.
Right.
Our email address is info, so INFO, all small letters, at Civio Institute, SIVIO Institute, or one word, .org. We're also across, you know, the main social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, as well as on LinkedIn. Our handle is at Civio Institute. So, you know, and people can even drop direct messages there. But if they contact us on the info at civioinstitute.org email address, it'll come straight to my desk and, you know, we can take it from there.
Thank you so much, Ada. I've enjoyed talking to you. For people who are interested in finding out about the Civio Institute, please check out the description on this episode, and also check out our show notes to learn more about the Charter Project Africa, the Civio Institute, and other grantees that we're going to be talking about in this program. Thank you so much, Ada.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure getting to talk to you and to your audience.
This concludes this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and review the podcast, and please see the episode description for all the places you can follow and engage with the Civic Tech Innovation Network. Until next time, goodbye.
This podcast is brought to you by Civic Tech Innovation Network in partnership with Voice of Vids.